Church planting 101.
Planting or planting?
Planting.
Planting.
You may not think of yourself as a church planter, but the principles that we're going to talk about with church planting really go for any kind of ministry. It doesn't have to be church planting, but the idea of church planting is something that we really tend to pigeonhole people who are church planters and not think about the fact that we're all involved. And when we talk about planting churches, this is reproduction, and we're called to reproduce. One of my favorite sermons to preach when I'm on the road is Born to Reproduce. Each and every one of us, when we talk about the idea of reproduction, immediately, because of the way we've been raised and the environment that we're in, we always think about it as physical reproduction. But we were created to reproduce the image and likeness of God. Adam and Eve were not just commissioned to it, they were commanded to reproduce the image and likeness of God. When we start talking about church planting is nothing more than a manifestation of that innate call that's in us. There are some people who are church planters. I mean, they can't not plant churches. They have to plant churches. Everywhere they go, they plant churches. If they're involved in a local church, they're not there for very long before they're unsettled and have to get out and do something. Those who are not wise sometimes cause church splits. But the truth is, we should have in us a desire to see new churches given birth, because that means that the family's growing. I come from a family of 7 kids. We start multiplying that out when we start talking about the children. I get excited about every new birth in the family. I don't care whether it's my brother's daughter or my sister's son. I don't care who it is that's giving birth. They're part of the family. I want to see the family grow. I want to see the family prosper. I want to see more and more of us. And when we do that right, then we come together for reunions that are just gangbusters good, and we have a blast. When you do that wrong, then you end up with all these estranged family units that don't talk to each other, don't interact with each other, and don't understand why they feel unfulfilled and empty. When we talk about church planting is something that really requires a call. Okay? When I think about it this way, the best way to say it is, if you believe that you are to plant a church, do everything you can to avoid it.
Say this again.
If you believe you are called to plant a church, do everything you can to avoid it. If you find out that no matter what you do, you keep coming back to the place of having to plant a church, you might actually be called.
Because people think they're called to plant a church when things aren't going well in the body they're with or something.
Yeah,
like
there's
that.
100 different reasons why people plant churches, most of which are absolutely ridiculous. They get it in their head that they're going to plant a church, and in this, they just cause far more damage than they do good. So, I remember going through school, and one of our teachers talked about his call to pastor and how he went to his pastor, and he said he believed he was called to pastor and that he was called to plant a church, and his pastor said, "No, you're not. Go sit down." Well, he had respect for his pastor, so he went, he sat down. Several months later, it was in him again, and he just had to. And he went to the pastor and he said, "Pastor, I just know that I'm called to pastor, and I believe I'm called to plant a church." And the pastor said, "No, you're not. Go sit down." And he said, it just went all through him. How could his pastor treat him like this. And he said, but Pastor, I believe that I'm called to plant a church. And he said, I told you, no, you're not. Go sit down. And he said, he went and he sat down. And again, you know, months went by. And he came in and he said, Pastor, I believe I'm called to pastor. And I believe I'm called to plant a church. And I don't care what you say, I'm going to go do it. And he said, good. Now you might be ready. Yeah, if you can be deterred, church planting is not for you. Because there is nothing harder than planting a church. We see all these supposed success stories that it seems like, you know, when somebody comes out, they plant a church and it explodes. And you find out later on that, yeah, they stole half somebody else's congregation when they started out. They, you know, they went sheep rustling all around the area, and now they've got this huge church. Sorry, I was getting ready to name names and point at
churches, don't do that.
And I don't want to do that. It's easy to do though because there's so many around. We see that happen all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I could name half a dozen churches in Bedford County that's the way they got started, and some of them got to be pretty good sized. But normally what happens in those situations is the person who was the charismatic leader who did that, when that person leaves, it then goes to nothing in a hurry. It's very rare that those churches survive to be anything worth anything.
Because they go looking for the next charismatic leader.
Yeah, well, they just get tired of things, or they've got a reputation to the place where they can't stay anymore. And a lot of different things. But when we talk about someone who is genuinely called to church planting, they will have a vision. Now, when I say a vision, what springs to mind for you?
Like a plan, like what they're supposed to do.
Okay.
And where they're supposed to
get. Here's something that I want to make sure you understand. There's a very big difference between vision and strategy. Okay. Vision is the picture of the goal. Strategy is how you get there. Okay. The goal line is 100 yards away. I'm going to use a combination of running plays, passing plays, trick plays, but I'm getting to the goal. And nothing that the enemy throws at me is going to keep me from getting to the goal. But I still have to get to the goal.
Well, that's coming back from Tuesday night now. I don't know what fouled that one in when I was so tired. Got it.
So when we talk about vision, the vision is the goal that's out in front of us. Okay, so if I come in with a vision for a church, for instance, there's going to be some specific statements that define what that goal looks like. Okay, so I'm going to plant a church. I'm going to plant Christ Victory Church. It's going to be a worshiping church, making disciples, changing the course of history by being doers of the word. There's three key elements to that vision that then have to have strategies in order to play out. But I don't start with the idea that, well, we're going to start a church, we'll see where it goes. Well, we're going to start a church and God will direct us as we go. No, because that's a setup for failure. You've got to have a vision out there. How will you know when you've reached your goal if you've never defined it?
You won't.
And like I said, we're talking about church planting, but this applies to any ministry. It doesn't matter what ministry it is. We've got to have a vision that's out there that tells us this is what we're shooting for. This is where we're going. When we talk about that vision, then the next thing that comes is, okay, before I can really form a strategy, I need to know what my resources are. I need to know what kind of resources I'll have in terms of finances, what kind of resources I'll have in terms of a leadership team, what kind of resources I'll have in terms of facilities. All of those things are going to come into play. When we look at those things, we may or may not be able to estimate what's available to us depending on whether or not we've done our homework. You want to start a church, a food pantry, a bus ministry. How many people want what you have to offer? I'm going to grow a mega church. How many people want what you have to offer? I'm going to have a healing center. how many people want what you have to offer? And are they willing to commit to it? When we started Household of Faith, I remember we had a Bible study. The Bible study was running about 35 people. And when we announced that we were going to do this church plant, we asked them how many of them would be on board with it. And out of the 35 people who were there, then we had a majority, 33 of them, signed on, said they would be part of the church plant. When we did the church plant, there was my wife, my five children, and me, that's seven, John Smith and his two little children, 10, and my mom was 11. Out of 33 people, 11 showed up. And not every week. Well, if you're doing a church plant, that can be really discouraging. If you don't know that you've got a call, if you haven't got a vision that you're shooting for, that first Sunday is enough to stop you. If you haven't figured out how big a crowd you're going to have, you won't know how big a facility. And if you've rented a facility for 1,000 and you have 11 show up, you're going to go bankrupt before you ever see the vision come to pass. Mm-hmm. If you have 50 people show up and it's just two people on your team, you may be overwhelmed by the size of the crowd, and the crowd will go, well, these people aren't ready. And then they don't come back. You know, all of these things come into play. And whether we're, you know, and one of the reasons I want to make sure that you guys understand this applies to any ministry is with your projects, your ministry projects, these are the things that come into play with the ministry project. You've got to know what it is that God's called you to do. You've got to have a vision for what it is God's called you to do. And you've got to know what kind of resources it's going to take to get it done. We're requiring that you have a year of success. You better know how to be a success. Okay? It doesn't just happen. It takes a lot of preparation and background before you get there. When we're talking about a church plant and preparation, doing your homework, assembling your team, doing all those kind of things are part of it. The most important thing, and I can't stress this enough, the most important thing for us as a leader being called to start something new is that we are properly prepared. I would venture that if you haven't spent hours and hours and hours agonizing in prayer over what God's called you to do, it may be that He didn't call you to it. Because when God calls you to do something, it's going to stretch you. It's going to stretch you to the place where you go, I can't do this. I'm not qualified. I don't have the resources. I can't do this. But everything we do by faith. So when it stretches you, all that tells you is, I guess I'm going to have to do this by faith. If you're not coming into this prayed up, you're not going to succeed. I don't care whether it's a church plant, a soup kitchen, I don't care what it is, you're not going to be a success. What do you think the average failure rate is for new ministry startups?
90%. Nope. Is my guess.
No, it's better than that.
80%.
Better than that.
60%.
It's better than that. 32% of new ministry startups fail over a 5-year period. The average life of a failing startup is 15 months. Why do you think that is?
Can you say those two again, please?
32% fail. The average time from start to failure is 15 months.
Well, I would say the 15 months thing, like a lot of people just aren't in it for the long haul. If they don't get the results that they think they're supposed to have in the short term, they just give up. They mm-hmm. lose the vision and just get discouraged.
Or if they weren't properly prepared or something, you know, people can last a while before they burn out, mm-hmm. even if they're struggling. But
And some of the 32% might be people doing things just because there was a hole and they took it to mean they should do it instead of actually finding out where they should be fitting into the body and accomplishing what they were made to do.
Remember, if we're not starting for the right reason, we're doomed to failure. Mm-hmm. Eventually. Not every church that fails because of a lack of preparation, or fails because of a lack of vision, or fails because of a lack of resources. Some of them fail because it just wasn't God in the first place. And people come in and they've got a great plan, a great strategy, but they don't have anything in terms of anointing behind it. There's no call that goes with it. And the end result is they get into it and it just falls on its face, because they haven't done what God was doing. And the end result is they're not doing it anymore. Now, being a church planter myself, this is one of those things. I started looking at doing notes and I went, I don't know what to do. Because I don't do what I do as a church planter based on a formula or strategy. I do it because it's who I am. When we planted our church in upstate New York, I remember going to the pastor and asking him, where do you want me to serve? What do you want me to do? And he said, well, we need a church plant. And I went, tell me where, tell me when. And I looked at the whole thing and thought, this is absolutely insane. What am I doing? I was still in the Navy. Everything about it was just ridiculous. And it ended up, before it was over, that my wife got called to pastor, not me. Because she was the one stuck with it. I was in the Navy and they shipped me to California. So there she was with this new church plant and having to do it all by herself. We should never have planted that church that way. But you live and learn. It was in our heart to plant churches. So I went to California. And I'm in California, and guess what I get involved in?
Church planting.
Church plant. There we planted a brand new Calvary Chapel. We started our very first Sunday with 125 people. I was impressed. I paid very close attention to the way that they did things, because it worked. And I got to talking to the pastor there, and Brian and I were talking, and I said, okay, so how did you get involved with planting this church? And he said, well, pastor came to me and said, we want to plant a church over here. You're the man. And I said, he told you that you're the man? He said, yeah, but it was already in my heart. So he just recognized what God was doing in me. And he went and they sat down and they prayed about it for 3 years. 3 years. They started recruiting home groups in the area that they were going to do the church plant. And when they had enough home groups in that area, then the home groups were birthed out of the original church into the new church. And had a big birthing celebration. I mean, it was pretty cool. And I asked him, I said, so what's the key to success? He said, Dunkin' Donuts. Because we had donuts.
That's a lot.
15 dozen donuts every Sunday morning. And I went, okay. And it was just one of the things that we did. The secret to our success was our home groups. We came in with a group of people who were already the church. They just had been meeting separately, and now we were meeting together. And we still did our home groups. But the strategy came out of prayer, and that strategy then became what we saw birthing vision that we had from the beginning. Now, when I came back to New York, I told Pastor Wayne, I said, we've been doing it all wrong. Let me tell you how we do this. And he was very patient with me. Thank God for tolerant people. And he listened to everything I had said. He said, well, that's the way they do it. What makes you think that's the way we should do it? And I thought, well, they succeeded. But as we worked together, that was the thing that we began to see, was there is reason to think about strategy, and there is something that we should look at in terms of how we develop an area for a church plant, how we develop an area for ministry, whatever the case might be. You know, it doesn't matter what area of ministry that we're going into. If there's no need for us, it won't succeed. If there's no desire for us, it won't succeed. Even if there's a need, if there's no desire, it's not going to succeed. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we need to find out what it is that meets the needs of people, and then see what God wants us to do about it. When we look at the other things that go into a church plant, there are a lot of things that come into play. And I'm not going to sit here and go through all of the legal side of it, because who cares? There's a legal side of it. When the time comes, we'll be glad to help you. Okay? I don't see any point in wasting a lot of time talking about the fact that, you know, there's the process for IRS 501c3. There's the process for tax evaluation. There's the process for bookkeeping that has to be done. All of those things, that's why you're tied to somebody else, because they can help you walk through all that stuff, and it's not a big deal when you do it that way. There are things that we can talk about in terms of the proper style of worship and the proper doctrinal statements and those kind of things, getting your constitution and bylaws in place. Again, when the time comes, we sit down together and do that.
Yeah, and you kind of covered that the other day for us too. Like how you did it, you contacted people right. That you knew, and yeah.
There is no substitute, however, for the time that we spend in prayer and preparation. There's nothing, I can't stress that enough. There is no substitute for the time we spend in prayer and preparation. We need a plan, we need a strategy, yes. Where will that plan and strategy come from?
Prayer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. God will give us a plan. And every church is going to be different. Every ministry is going to be different. Just because somebody else did it this way doesn't mean that's the way that you do it. You do what God gives you to do. You don't try and be something that you're not. You are not Joel Osteen. Don't try.
Don't worry.
That's true.
No worries there.
You know, it doesn't make any sense to try and duplicate somebody else. If God gave you something to do, He'll tell you how to do it. He picked you because you're you. He doesn't want cookie cutter anything. What He wants is for you to rise to what He's called you to do. Financially, let me just tell you that I don't care how good you are with finances. I don't care how much money you have in the bank. When it comes to ministry, you will be stretched every which way, because we do this by faith. We are wholly dependent on God, not on people, on God. Well, but the people have to bring out, you're right. But God will send offerings through people who don't even know why they're sending it.
That's right.
So we're wholly dependent on God. Then we start talking about things like, how do we relate to our community? You can imagine. Somebody comes here from the big city, gonna start a new church. Somebody spreads manure in the backyard.
I was just thinking of my brother. Right before you
said. And they immediately want to go to the local authorities and get this dealt with.
Get the poo out my yard.
How long is that plant gonna last?
Not very long.
Maybe 2 weeks.
We had a couple that came to work with us from Oklahoma City, and they were with us 6 weeks. At the end of 6 weeks, Julie went to Jim and said, "This place is not our place, and I'm leaving. You can stay."
Oh, wow.
I'm leaving.
I thought I was gussy.
She had come to me 2 weeks before, and she said, "Does everything close at 6? This is before Walmart. Does everything close at 6 o'clock? And I went, "Yeah. People have to get up in the morning." She said, "What do you mean people?" I said, "This is a farming community. People are getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to milk cows. They're not going to be running around town all hours of the night." Well, Are there any 24-hour grocery stores? Are there any real theaters? And I said, in Altoona. That city. We don't live in the city. What do you do City's for fun? And I couldn't resist. I said, we go cow tipping.
Oh, you did not.
I did too. And she went, what's cow tipping?
Or swipe hunting, you know.
After I moved up here, it took me 5 years to find out if cow tipping was a real thing or not.
I'm from the city. Maybe the second time I heard of it. I don't know if I heard
possum
of it.
Kicking.
Huh?
Possum kicking.
Never did that.
I don't kick a possum.
I did hear snipe.
God's creature.
Crayfish hunting.
Yeah, it's imperative that we be able to relate to the culture of our community. I remember when I went through the interview here with the council, and they talked about the fact, you know, how did I feel about pastoring a church in a farm community? And I said, I feel right at home. I grew up in this kind of a community. I don't have any problem with that. And then the very first Sunday that I was here, somebody's four-wheeler was parked in the parking lot, and the second one, Barry's tractor was parked in parking lot, and I thought, this really is a country church. Yeah.
My favorite was the week you guys were away and the sheep and the goats got loose, and I sent you that picture. I was like, I think there's a Bible lesson in this.
Yeah, it's one of those things that if God calls you to a community, it's because you have something to offer that community. Mm-hmm. But if your cultural development can't relate to that community, then you're not ready to go there. I've been in the city and I've been in the country. I can literally do ministry either place. I've done missions on the foreign field in third world, and I've done missions in the first world. I much prefer running water that you can drink, flushing toilets, and hot showers. Mm-hmm. However, I can do without all of that. I know how. The question when we are planning ministry is, have I done my homework and done what it takes to be God's gift to my community? This is not God's gift to me. This is me being God's gift to the community. Now, when we go to planning churches, what's our goal?
To grow spiritually and numerically.
Okay. So how do we do that?
Good question.
Well, you need to do outreaches, period. Like, because even in the Bible, we're told to look after orphans and widows in their distress. And different things like that. There are commands to help people in the community. We need to love on them in whatever ways line up with the vision for our church.
I'm going to keep coming back to this statistic because it's one of those that just burns on the inside of me. If 30,000 people in Bedford County are unchurched, why would I go after the ones who are?
You shouldn't, because they already are.
Yeah, there's nothing that irritates me or frosts me more than to hear that some other pastor has been trying to poach the sheep from our congregation.
It's headhunting is what it is.
And it just goes all through me, and I want to go and love them with a brick.
I'm glad you restrained yourself. We like you here on Sunday morning.
Why would you do that when there's so many
lost
people who are not, you know, of the 20,000 who are in church, how many of them are in church on a regular basis, Christmas and Easter? Mm-hmm. How many of them are in a church that isn't worth being part of? Now, I'm still not going after them. But if they come here, that's okay. They're going to be their choice. But they're going to come here because we've got something that their church doesn't offer. I'm not going after them. They're coming, and then I'm going to call their pastor and say, did you know that they were in our church this Sunday? I would hope that somebody would do that for them. They don't, but that's... Mm-hmm. You know, I want them to know, hey, if they're looking for something and they're not getting it at home, you need to know about it. Well, you can have them. I don't want them. Well, I can see why they're out shopping.
Mm-hmm. So, I know, like, the Good. One pastor we had, and like you, I'm not saying names. Within his first 2 months, he was a younger gentleman, and right off the bat, he wanted everybody in leadership positions to go over a list of people that used to come to our church and call them. And some of the people on there were people that had had issues, and they went other places, whether right or wrong. But God had worked a lot of things out with them, and they were doing well where they were. And I'm looking at him, and I even told him, I said, why would I call them back to this? If they have got settled and God is doing a work in them, I'm like, my point was yours. Like, look at all the people out here. Well, we need a solid base was the foundation. I'm thinking, how are they a solid base if they left? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, our solid base is the people are here now.
Yeah, because as soon as things go down, the same people would go. And, like, you know, a lot of times, whether they leave for right or wrong reasons, a lot of times people do get it right with God later. And if they're growing there, by all means, I'm, like, leave them flourish where they're at, you know? And then...
Yeah, part of the thing that I see in churches, and maybe this comes from my heart as a church planner, but I see people who want to bring in more and more and more, more and more and more, but they don't ever want to give birth to anything new. My idea is a lot different. You know, I'm sitting every day thinking about, okay, we're here. Is there room for a church like ours in Clearville? Is there room for a church like ours in Woodbury? Is there room for a church like ours somewhere else that we can begin to recruit people in that area, start building home groups, Bible studies, whatever, and give birth to a new church? We've got leadership training school going on. We're not raising up leaders so that we can hoard them all here. We're raising up leaders to be able to plant you in places where we can expand the impact and the influence of the kingdom of God by what we do. If we constantly are trying to keep everybody here, then what's the point? Again, I'll point at the Wave Church. I love the Wave Church. But to have one person as the senior pastor for 8 locations, there's something wrong with that. That's my opinion. Because I need to be able to trust the leaders that I raise up to take what we have and flourish wherever they go. You know, if we're affiliated as a network, that's fantastic. But if I have to be the pastor here and the pastor there and the pastor there, how can I ever be the pastor? Not really. But that's a whole different discussion. When we're planning churches, we should be looking at it as reproduction. When we get married, there are very few people who get married with the idea that, okay, now that's the end of it. We will have no more. It'll be us two and no more. Mm-hmm. Most people, when they get married, are thinking, oh, we're going to have at least one baby. See how that one turns out, and we'll decide we'll have any more. And then the next thing, they get 8. But the idea of reproduction is part of the vision. Why don't churches have that reproductive vision? And we should be, as a church, thinking about, where are we going to plant our next congregation? Where are we going to raise up the next set of leaders to go? What is it that we've got in mind for the next group? When we had all of the fallout, one of the things that was said was that Jeff had a vision to plant a church. Well, how much better would that have been if we had done it together? And I'm not saying that to in any way criticize him. What I'm saying is, if that's our vision to plant churches, then together we do it, and we do it successfully.
And that would have really brought glory to God.
Yeah. So, why we plant churches is for reproduction. No other reason. We're not looking for a place, to install somebody so they have a job. We're looking for the kingdom of God to grow. We're looking for an opportunity to see more influence of the kingdom in our community. We are increasing numbers, obviously, but that's not our goal. Our goal is not increase numbers. Our goal is to increase the impact of the kingdom of God. That will come through increased numbers. We'll have more offering as a result of increased numbers. We'll have more things that we can do because we've got a bigger group. The bigger the group, the more you can do. But that's not why we do what we do. We're doing this to meet the mandate of going to all the world to preach the gospel, to go and make disciples of all nations. And this is what a church is all about. A church has one function, and that is making disciples. Now, that manifests in a lot of different ways, but the only function we have is making disciples. Okay? We're not an evangelism center. Evangelism will go on, but that's not why we're here. We are here to make disciples. When we talk about giving birth to a church, think about it in terms of giving birth in the natural. What's involved in order to be able to see birth happen in the natural?
I never gave birth.
I had a C-section. Let me just tell you, birth is painful. It can be painful, but what you get out of it is a much greater reward than any pain that comes.
I know,
away.
But let's yeah. back up and
just
talk.
The agreement of two people first.
Okay, number one, you have to have two people in agreement. There has to be an agreed team to start with. Okay, there can be no conception without that agreement. Okay. Once you have conception, then what?
Well, you have to take care of yourself because, like, your body's going to hold the baby.
What do we call that in the natural?
Prenatal care.
Prenatal care. Before the church is ever birthed, there has to be prenatal care. Now, when a woman is going through prenatal care, there are a lot of different things that go on. Husbands get off easy. She has to eat right. She has to sleep right. She has to make sure that she's getting proper exercise.
Sometimes
there's supplements. But the whole point is preparing for successful delivery. Okay? And that's what prenatal is all about, is preparing for a successful launch. Now, as that's going, what kind of things do the parents do?
They prepare the nursery. They buy.
Before we ever get to that.
Oh.
What's the first thing? As soon as they know they're pregnant, what's the very first thing they do?
Oh, they tell everybody.
They tell everybody.
I was like, I'm back there now. Sorry.
Missing the obvious.
Yeah. They tell everybody.
And my biggest recommendation is, then pray with your team and have it all set so you know from the Holy Spirit what the name of that church is supposed to be before everybody yeah. else gets involved.
And? Yeah, so you're not going to tell everybody every detail from the beginning. All you're going to tell them is, we're going to give birth to a new church. Did you hear? We're going to give birth to a new church. Well, what that does is begins to build a sense of expectation and excitement. Mm-hmm. And so people begin to get on board with that, and they begin to think, oh, well, you know. And we start talking to them about how they can help, how they can be involved. You know, we're not interested in taking all of the new church out of the old church, but we will take part of the old church as either a leadership team or as a starter group that's going to be part of this new church plant. And then we start doing things that build toward that. You know, there might be the reveal, boy or girl. There might be the posting of the ultrasound video, whatever the case might be. But we're going to be doing things that keep people reminded. Something new is coming. Something new is coming. Something new is coming. And you probably have noticed, new expectant parents are annoying. That's all they talk about. It seems like that's all that they ever care about. They were so nice before this baby. And it'll be the same way in a new ministry start, because that's all you want to talk about. You know, you want to talk about what's going to be going on. You're going to talk about how you're going to be involved. That's okay. It will build excitement. And everybody will be asking, when are you due? When is it coming? Right?
And everybody else had their baby first when I was pregnant. That's all I'm thinking in my head. All my friends had their babies first.
And the closer the day gets, the more uncomfortable it becomes.
Mm-hmm. Because things are going to change.
Everything's going to change. And at the point when you're ready to deliver, then it gets intense. All of the sudden, and I remember two of my daughters especially saying this, okay, I don't want to do this anymore.
A little late now.
And they weren't even in transition yet. You know, it's going to get pretty hairy. And then here comes the new baby. The new baby is birthed. And you think, okay, finally, it's over. Right. No, it just started. All of the sudden, everything has changed. And we have to figure out how to relate to the people who were before the new baby in a way that we never related to them before. And now we have to relate to this new baby that's putting such demands on our time, such demands on our finances, such demands on everything. This thing thinks it owns the world.
And all of a sudden, Dad doesn't get off as easy anymore.
So, that is one thing I like about a church birth. I do think that the spouse is much more involved in that aspect. It's harder to get away from it.
Well, and in terms of giving birth to a church, if God calls you as a leader, your spouse has got to be 100% on board.
Oh, yeah.
No two ways about it. It's got to be 100%. Because otherwise, you look out. A church plant really will test every aspect of every relationship. Really well. So you want to have your act together before it ever starts. You want to be prayed up before it ever starts. You want to be in right relationship yourself before you ever think about starting anything.
I don't feel called to do that. But if I had been, my thing with James would have been, get a grip, Jim. Get a grip. You can do that.
So then the new baby comes. The cost of everything increases. The time constraints on everything increases. Everything about life changes.
A lot less about you and a lot more about them.
If you don't keep sight of the vision, it'll be easy to get distracted and sidetracked. Focus on the vision, work the plan. Let me say that again. Focus on the vision, work the plan. Focus on the vision, work the plan. What if the plan's not working?
Pray and God might make small adjustments to make the plan work.
Might make big adjustments, mm-hmm. But don't be afraid to change it.
And you can always seek
strategies have got to be flexible. Okay, strategies are not set in stone. You make whatever changes in strategy that you need to make. That's just how ministry is. You have to maximize flexibility. You know, Lindsay, from being on the mission field, sometimes you get to the mission field and everything that you had planned doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? Well, that's it. I'm going home.
Your ticket's not for three more weeks.
One of the funnest times was we went in and did VBS in the jungle. It's a huge ministry there because a lot of the adults aren't real open to the gospel, but the kids are hungry and they need attention. So, you know, children's ministry is huge. Not that it's not huge here, too. But, the concept of, games were completely different. The concept of crafts is completely different. The normal skill level that, you know, a 6 or 7 year old you think would expect to have from here, it's not the same there. And the way you teach, the way you do songs, you have to adapt to what they understand. You still preach, you know, the message that God tells you, just preach and you can, you have to adapt or else they won't understand what you're doing. Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that in a new ministry plant that maybe the people that you thought were going to come aren't the ones who come. And you have to adjust accordingly. So, the biggest thing is tenacity. It is vital. You have to be able to bite in and hang on until you see what God told you to do done. Just that simple.
Like Jeffrey shared that one time, that one dude that preached all those decades and one convert. But then look what the one convert does.
Mm-hmm.
We have to not look so much at numbers as we do at people.
God does not measure our success in people. He measures our success in obedience. Did you do what I told you to do? It's just that simple. Did you do what I told you to do? I'm going to be able to say yes every time. Questions?